You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a similar question from two listeners. So you're going to get a twofer on this one, but they both wrote in and asked about what do you do about the end of session and kids cleaning up the toys or not. So I'll actually read the specific questions from each of them, and then we'll kind of dive into how to handle the cleaning up of toys in the playroom, specifically from a child-centered model. So Meredith from Georgia, thanks for reaching out. She first said that I hang out with her in her car while she folds laundry and cleans the house. So thank you for doing laundry and housework with me, Meredith. That's so lovely. And she says, what do you do at the end of the play therapy session about cleaning and picking up toys? I've used it as choice giving. For example, if you choose to play with toys, then you choose to clean up. But she wanted my input. So thank you, Meredith, for that question. And then similarly, I had Katarina reach out, and she actually wrote in with several questions, but one of them is, also, if the child makes a huge mess at the end of the session, should you ask them to clean it up, or is that more of a directive method and not child-centered? So that's kind of the question that most relates to Meredith's question. And then she added in also, what if the parents see the mess? If you don't clean up, they may shame the child. What do you think about that? So that's kind of an interesting addendum. So Katarina, thank you for that. I'll actually talk about that toward the end. So here are my thoughts on how I handle it and what I suggest so that you can remain adherent to the child-centered model. One of the things that I talk about in the very first session with a child, and I covered this in an earlier episode of how to introduce the play therapy process to a child on their very first visit. So if you did not hear that episode, please go back and check that out. It'll help you. But one of the things that I talk about with the child is I'm going to be taking notes, and we play for 50 minutes, and we'll wash hands at the end, we'll get a snack, etc. So I go through the whole process. But one of the things that I share with them is, when you come, you play and I clean up. I say that in the very first session. I make that very clear. That becomes a very explicitly stated expectation. So sometimes they forget that, and I only mentioned it on the first visit. So they may be four or five sessions in and they don't remember that I said that, because the first session is overwhelming and they're trying to digest a new room, a new person, a new experience. And I tell them these things and then they do drawings with me and it's just a whirlwind for them. So they don't always remember. However, they did hear on the very first visit that it's their job to play, my job to clean. So that is the way that I explain it to kids. And if I see a child cleaning up, which you kind of have different options of how a child's going to clean. So this is a little bit of a sidebar, but you will have a child who cleans as they go. So they get out the blocks, they play with the blocks, then they put the blocks back before they move on to the Legos. And then they play with the Legos, and then they put the Legos away before they move on to the marble run, etc. So you have a child who cleans and plays simultaneously throughout the session. That is one scenario. Another scenario is the child waits till the 5-minute warning or the 2-minute warning, and then wants to leave the room completely picked up before their time is up. So they spend the last few minutes putting everything away. So those are typically how you will see children clean a playroom. In either scenario, whether the child's doing it while they're playing throughout the session or whether they're doing it at the end, kind of in whirlwind fashion, I remind them that they do not have to clean up. And so typically how I'll phrase that is, you're putting things away, but you know that you don't have to clean up in here. That's my job. And once you state that, you will get a really good sense of where the child is emotionally and what they're working on. Because if they go, oh, and they stop cleaning, they just truly forgot or didn't know. Or they will say, I know, but And then they give you a reason why they're going to clean up anyway. So I know, but I always want to put things back. Or I know, but I don't want to leave a mess for you. Or I know, but then you'll have to clean before your next kid and you won't have any time. So you definitely get a pretty good handle on where the child is and what they're going through based on their response to being told that they do not have to clean up. So that is how I phrase with kids the expectation that it is their job to play, my job to clean. Now, the premise of why we do not clean up is just as important as how we handle it with kids. So I want to spend a little bit of time on that. We are essentially allowing a child to have a conversation with us in their play. As they're playing, they are letting us in on their needs, thoughts, desires, feelings, wishes. And when we let them play and let them leave their toys out, we are holding that conversation for them. And they're trusting us with that conversation. And why that matters is if we tell a child, whether we set a limit on it, whether we give them a choice, whether we make it clear that it's their job, however it comes out, when we make a child clean up what they've played with, we are essentially, inadvertently, telling them to take everything that they shared with us back. So I'm not holding it for you. You can't trust me with it. It's not safe to stay here with me. You are going to put it all back as if we did not have this exchange. And why that matters is because think about this in terms of adult therapy. So think about what it would be like to go to a talk therapist, sit down, have an hour-long discussion with them. And at the end of the hour-long discussion, the therapist says, okay, I'd like you to just kind of pack all that back up and take it with you when you go. I really don't want to hold on to that hour-long conversation. So if you could just clean that up for me, that would be great. First of all, we would never do that. But second of all, imagine how that would make us feel. You know, I shared all this with you. I gave you all of this. I let you hold all of this. I let you in with all of this. And now you just want me to take it all back? The implication there is really, really deep for kids. And remember, everything about the child-centered model hinges back to what? I know you all said it, the relationship. So when we think about that, the relationship is at the heart of everything. When children are playing in our room, it is relational because we're witnessing it, we're watching it, we're involved in it, we're engaging in it. So we have this part in this conversation, if you will. I'm air quoting conversation. Sometimes it's not verbal at all, but they're definitely communicating with us. So that communication matters, and we don't ever want a child to feel that they have to take it back. That is why we clean up, because it communicates that we are able to keep that for them. And as we hold it for them, it allows them to trust us. It allows them to know that we can handle it. It allows them to know that it's safe with us and we can keep it for them. Now, here's the really cool thing about when we clean up for the child rather than the other way around. So if the child leaves an absolute mess in our room, and I'm actually going to spend a little related aside in a second and talk about what a messy room can look like and why. But when we have a child that really has played with a ton of stuff and the room has a lot of toys out and we let them leave and then we clean it up for them, it gives them two options when they return. They can either get the same toys that they already played with and continue with the same theme, the same characters, the same dialogue, the same play, as if the whole week hasn't elapsed in the meantime. So you essentially hit pause and the child can just reconvene and do exactly what they were doing last time because you held it for them for that whole week. Or they come in, it's a clean room, and they have a blank slate to do something completely different in their play. So if they need to revisit it, they will. If they don't, they'll move on to something else. And in either scenario, you held it for them. You gave them the space, the time, the trust, the safety, all of it, so that they can do what they need to do when they return. But in any scenario from a child-centered model, children do not clean the room for the reasons that I just shared. All right, so let me take a little left turn here really quickly, related aside. When children end up playing with a whole bunch of things in the playroom, we can look at it and go, oh my gosh, this playroom is a wreck. This playroom is so messy. Oh my gosh, I have so much I have to clean up. And look, that's why we build in turnaround time in between our appointments, right? So if you have a 50-minute therapeutic session, you have 10 minutes to clean your room. That's why you don't see a child for the full 60 minutes, because you need time to be able to put your toys away. That's built into your therapeutic hour. So a 45 or a 50-minute session, that's a full therapeutic hour, and then you still have time to put the toys away. That is why you have that time built into your schedule. So don't neglect that. Don't make a child clean up because you don't have time. You need to build in time to do that. So when you look at a, quote, messy room, there are lots of different reasons why the room gets messy. There's mess-making play, where the child is literally just making a mess for the sake of making a mess. Then there's the busybody child that plays with 800 things in an hour and they don't stick with anything. So everything gets used and it's all over the floor, but they actually did in fact use all of the things they played with. Then sometimes you have kids that they play with only, for example, Legos and Lincoln Logs, but they dumped your entire bin of Legos on the floor and they dumped your entire bin of Lincoln Logs on the floor. So it looks like an absolute mess, but it's really only two objects, right? So there's all kinds. And then you have like the room wreck kids that lose their mind and they just destroy things. And then your room is absolutely wrecked. And that's a huge mess. So all of these manifest themselves differently, but in all scenarios, you end up with a room that needs to be cleaned up. And in none of those scenarios does the child clean the room up. So the mess play can be defined in a whole bunch of different ways with a whole bunch of reasons behind that kind of play. But in no scenario is the child ever expected to clean the room. So Meredith, Katarina, thank you so much for your questions. Katarina, let me circle back to the second part of your question. What if the parents see the mess? If you don't clean up, they may shame the child. This is really helpful. Adults are never down our playroom's hallway. So adults never get to see the state of the room when the child is done. We don't have two-way mirrors. Parents are nowhere near the playrooms. So at my center, parents would not be able to see the state of the room, which is a really good thing. If you happen to be in a place where parents can see the state of the room, that's a different story. But when I tell parents that kids do not clean the playroom, I will often get the same reaction that you're describing, Katarina, where they say, well, I don't know that I'm okay with that because they always have to clean up at home. And I don't want them to think that if they don't have to clean up here, that they can just leave a mess at home. Or, well, there are rules everywhere they go about cleaning up. At school, they have to clean up. At aftercare, they have to clean up. At church, they have to clean up. At home, they have to clean up. So this is going to be really difficult for them if they just start thinking they don't have to pick up their messes. So there's definitely that concern from parents sometimes about the privilege of not cleaning up after they play. So this is where the articulation and the communication with parents is so important. So Katarina, to speak to your point, what if they see the mess? If for whatever reason, the parent is given access to the playroom where you work, in the very first consultation meeting that you have with them, you need to be very clear and set expectations on why kids do not clean up. Share with them exactly what I've just shared with you. Give them all of the reasons, all of the rationale behind not having a child clean up. Help them understand the therapeutic value of that. Help them understand the relational component of that between the child and you as the therapist. And you need to set expectations on what the parents will do and how they'll handle that. So if it were me, I would say, I just want you to know that it's my job to clean. It's their job to play. That is the way that the playroom is structured. Here's why. So it does not matter what state the playroom is left in. It is always my job to clean up, and the child should never be expected nor asked to help clean up. That's not what the child is here for. The child is here to play. And so then if they were to shame the child or bring that up in any way, you would circle back to the expectation that was always set. And if that were the case, I would say to the parent, oh, you remember that I clean and the child plays. That's how it works. And you just reinforce it the same way you would reinforce it with the child if they go to clean something up in your playroom. So I hope that that is helpful for you. Meredith and Katarina, thank you both for the question about cleaning. I hope that that was helpful for all of you. And speaking of cleaning, I hope that you all remember the podcast episode that I posted a while back now about how I handled a kid that absolutely destroyed my room, and there was a picture of the playroom, and so many of you replied to that episode, so I know that resonated with a lot of you. So I'm still working with that child on a very infrequent basis. It's usually only about once a month these days. But he came in last night, and they had just gotten back from a cruise. So bad news bears right out of the gate. As soon as Dad said, oh, we just got back from a cruise, I thought, I'm not sure this is going to go well, because this child does not do well off schedule. This child does not do well with differences, with, you know, a new time schedule, with everything just being different and being tired and vacation and all of it. I just thought, well, I really hope that this goes well. And it did not. I had to carry him back to the playroom. I have two bruises on my chin from a headbutt. I have a massive bruise on my shoulder from a headbutt. I have a massive welt on my arm from a stool that was thrown at me. So I just want you all to be encouraged. Sometimes there's occupational hazards with this job, and they're not always physical, right? Because I have the physical occupational hazards right now of him throwing things and hitting me and biting, kicking, scratching. I mean, you name it. He was trying the whole arsenal. And I ended up having to hold him, like I mentioned in that episode. And I had to keep saying, if you choose to try to hurt me, or if you choose to throw things in the room, you choose for me to hold you to keep both of us safe. And he was screaming, and oh my gosh. And there were three dads in the lobby, and they just heard the whole thing. And at one point he was like, she's killing me, daddy, she's killing me. And I'm like, this sounds so bad. But come to find out, and let me pause on a really positive note, because this really is meant to encourage you, not to make you really fearful of kids that lose their minds in your playroom. But honestly, I want to tell you a story, because this is the magic of the child-centered model. So this kid has had to have been carried back several times. He has wrecked my room several times. This has happened in different rounds over the course of time that I've worked with this child. And mom and dad trust me so much, and mom and dad are so bought in, and mom and dad understand what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And they value that I have to do this my way, and I have thought and intention and purpose behind every moment of my interactions with him. And my office manager said, as soon as I carried him back into the room and I closed the door, as soon as the dad heard that the door was closed, he grabbed his earbuds and he put them in his ear and he started watching his movie. And like, he didn't care what was happening back there. He wasn't listening to the screaming. He didn't have a care in the world. And he just sat out in the lobby and watched his movie while his kid announced to the world that I was killing him and he needed to be rescued. So when you have parents understand and value and believe in what you're doing, no matter how bad it gets in the playroom, it's a positive outcome. The child calmed down. He ended up finishing the session laying down calmly. He was quiet. He was no longer aggressive. He was no longer hurting me. He was no longer throwing anything. He regulated quickly. He stayed calm. He spent the rest of the time in the playroom quietly toward the end. And all is well that ends well, right? But I have the bruises to show for it. And I want you to be reminded, yes, there's going to be occupational hazards emotionally. There's going to be occupational hazards mentally. There's going to be occupational hazards physically sometimes. But that little boy learned a lot from that experience, and he always comes back. He did tell me last night he's never coming back, but he said that before. And he always does. Why? Because he knows that I unconditionally love him. I unconditionally accept him. And I only set boundaries and limits out of safety. If he would have not been hurting me, and if he would have not been throwing things, I wouldn't have had to hold him. So I did what was necessary, but it was done with love, and it was done with compassion, and it was done with gentleness. And he didn't like it, but he was completely dysregulated. And as soon as he got back under control, he actually spent a very long time after that whole exchange of him trying to hurt me and throwing things and all that. He was laying in my lap with his head in my elbow. And there's relationship there. There's connection there. And that is so powerful. And, you know, I get home and I had to take ibuprofen. I couldn't chew and my chin still really hurts today even. But, and my husband's like, at what point are you going to just stop working with this kid? Like this, you should not be getting hurt in play sessions. And I don't understand why you keep doing this. And I get that from the outside looking in, you know, why would I subject myself to this in multiple rounds? But the reality is that this kid needs someone to be there for him at his worst so that he can become his best. And mom and dad aren't equipped to do that. Teachers aren't equipped to do that. Pediatricians aren't equipped to do that. No one's equipped to do that except a child-centered play therapist. So the goal is to remember the why. Remember the why of what we do. We give kids the relationship, the environment, the time, the tools, and the opportunity to become the best version of themselves that they can be. It is unique only to our field. It is unique only to our model. And when we love kids unconditionally, they feel it, they sense it, they trust us, they believe in it, and they become it. So frustrating, yes, I have war wounds to prove it. The lumps and the bruises do not feel good at this moment, but you know what? They will fade and they will go away. What he learned in that session is far more powerful. So be encouraged. Don't lose hope. Don't lose sight of the why. All of it matters. And you're doing what you need to do to help a generation of kids. And my vision is a world full of happy kids that become happy adults. And that's what we're all working toward, right? We're giving kids an opportunity to be happy now so that they're happy later. That's the goal. Don't forget that. Love you guys. Thanks for spending time with me this week. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.